This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Game Time, episode 25. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with
Richard Bradbury.
And we're one more episode away from the last show of the year, where we will take a look back at the best of 2016 and also give you a look forward of 2017. But on this episode, we have a review of the PlayStation VR.
We do.
But first, yet again, I received an email from a listener who's in the gaming industry. And I think he did the same thing again. He went on to BFM.my, and then I think he went all the way to the bottom and just contact us. And he sent in an email request. And he's part of this company called Off Gamers. It's a Malaysian-based online game store and distribution platform for gamers, game developers, and publishers. They've been around for 12 years now. So this was way before mobile apps and, you know, the gaming world as we know of today. We only had, I think, PS2 and the PSP back about 12 years ago. That was a long time back. So I spoke to Leonard Chi, the CEO, and also his wife, Karen Thung, who's also the business director of Off Gamers. And I just had to ask them, who are Off Gamers exactly?
Well, essentially, Off Gamers is a platform for gamers to purchase their games and game top-ups. We also assist game publishers to market their games in different regions by running promotions and online campaigns. Our staff are mostly gamers and very passionate about the industry.
And in 2004 is when you started Off Gamers, right? But I understand there's also a story of how it came about in Off Gamers. It was previously not Off Gamers in that sense. It was just like a hobby thing, selling on eBay, if I'm not mistaken.
In 2001, when my brother Ken was studying in the States, he used to play this game called Diablo 2. And one day he tried selling a sword on eBay. And someone actually bought it. So he thought maybe there's something here. And I started selling more on eBay and started an online store selling just D2 items. It was called offd2.com. So when he came back, my other brother Stanley and myself, we joined him and we continued to add more games and created more stores. And in 2004, we decided that we wanted to merge everything into one because it was very hard to maintain all the databases and customers need to have separate logins. You know, so that was when we incorporated Off Gamers.
It sounds like it's a family of gamers as well. You're a gamer, I presume, and your brother's a gamer. And obviously, your wife, Karen, you're the business director, but I'm assuming you're also a gamer as well.
Yes, I am.
So this is a whole family of gamers who have decided to, you know, sort of get together and, like, you know, let's do something, let's give back to the community. Is that sort of like the direction? Or because, you know, 2004, the gaming scene was very different, right? Now it's become a sexy industry in that sense. You know, it makes more money than Hollywood and the music industry combined. And, you know, we've seen how even here locally, you know, guys like MDEC who are doing Level Up KL and they're promoting the beauty of the gaming industry. But it was not as beautiful as it is now in 2004.
Yep.
How different was it back then in 2004?
At that time, there were not so many games. And you know, mostly PCs and consoles were the dominant platforms. And most online games were either subscription-based or you just simply buy a box and you own the game. Nowadays, you have freemium, free-to-play, all sorts of new...
And games are now mobile. Which means no more working hard enough. And yeah, so it's a lot different. Back in 2004, nobody knows about gaming, or even less about Off Gamers. And it was pretty challenging that when we were expanding our workforce. For example, hiring. Back then, we were doing this thing called D2 Items, and also some other secondary market, and we need rank and files. So we were hiring school leavers, and school leavers being school leavers, they are very young, and some of them didn't get to complete their studies, very passionate about games, and they're very knowledgeable So we took them in, and but it was really hard because they're very young. So most of the time, the parents would interfere.
Yeah, the stigma.
Yeah, the stigma. And
so when you say parents will interfere, as in what, they would literally come up to your office and
yes,
all?
Yes, call.
Ah.
Yeah.
And what do they ask?
They would ask me if we're a cyber cafe. they would ask me if their job is just to play games. Is there a future with us? And some of them don't believe what I say over the phone. They'll come out and I'll show them around and say, hey, you know, this is the accounting department and this is the marketing department. And this.
It's a proper business.
Yeah, it's a proper business. Right. And your son will be seated here.
Yeah. Right. And in 2004, who were you catering to? Like, what was your target market? Or, you know, was that were you all set to, like, let's dominate the Malaysian market, or were you decided, like, you know, there is market outside of Malaysia, so, you know, let's look around the world and let's cater to every gamer no matter where you come from?
At that time, we didn't really target any specific market. It's just the website is there. If you want to buy something, you come, you know. And there are not many websites selling stuff at the time.
All right.
Relating to games. So, but our original market were mostly from the US, Europe.
Wow.
Even the Middle East.
Not many from Malaysia then in the beginning?
Not many.
Not many.
Oh.
Many.
Yeah. Has it changed now?
We have started to do Malaysia games in back in 2007. Mm. And yeah, now we have more Malaysia customers.
Right. So when what made you decide, like, you know, let's try to cater to the Malaysian market? What is it? What's unique about Malaysian market that now you're getting more Malaysian, you know, customers? Is it just more awareness of what Off Gamers is all about, or is it just like having certain types of games on your platform that, you know, will attract Malaysian customers?
Back in those days, I think it's also the limitations of, I would say, data and also internet, that Malaysian gamers were not able to benefit fully, you know.
Bandwidth was too expensive to play those online games.
Mm. Yeah. But when in 2007, when we venture into the Malaysian market, the scene has more or less changed, and the accessibility is higher. And also the stigma towards topping up your game is not so bad.
Mm.
It's no longer a sin that I top up my game, you know, I pay for it and I continue to pay for it.
And it used to be a stigma.
It used to be, yeah. Right. It used to be, it's like, oh, why am I paying for this, you know? So, you shouldn't be paying for this, you know,
right.
Or stuff like that. You get peer pressure and all that. And it started to change back in those days. And also, game publishers, they were bringing in games into Malaysia and they needed our services.
Mm-hmm.
So back in those days, we still work with KiwiNet. We work with Perfect World. Asia Soft. And we are still partners till today.
So how hard was it then in 2004 when you went up to probably your first few publishers and to tell them this is what we're doing and we're trying to create a market here in Malaysia, and, you know, if you could get your games that you're publishing onto our platform and have a certain deals, you know, this is what we can cater to? Because it's obviously difficult. 2004 and then in 2007 in the Malaysian market, I'm sure it was a very different scene and, you know, there were not many players like you guys. Was it difficult because obviously you don't have the traction, you don't have that numbers that, you know, publishers want to, but I'm sure there were certain publishers who took the risk, then you have the partnership now. So how difficult was that conversation?
It wasn't so much difficult than, you know, convincing them what we can do. But most of them have been quite supportive, even at that time. And they let us try and some became very good partners.
And friends.
Over the years, yeah.
And friends
and
as well.
Friends,
yeah.
And friends.
What was the biggest challenge then in the whole entire operations when you started Off Gamers in 2004 until now in 2016, what has been like the biggest learning curve throughout the number of years running Off Gamers?
I would say this industry is very saturated, I think, yeah. And the margin is very low, yeah. And a lot of publishers, game publishers, even if they bring in big titles, there's no guarantee that the game will survive the first 3-6 months, right? So at that time, one of our biggest challenge was inventory, actually, because a lot when we were new, a lot of the deals were cash up front, so we had to buy the inventory and later on resell.
Wow! So you took the risk in that sense, then.
Yeah.
And now it's paying off, and now it's a different sort of business model already.
Now we have after we gained their trust, they gave us terms and sometimes consignment, so it's a little better on our cash flow.
And what's available on Off Gamers platform? Like, you know, what are some of the hits? Some of the names that, you know, most common people will be familiar with. I'm guessing here, World of Warcraft is definitely on this list. Yeah.
Yep.
It's one of them.
We have World of Warcraft, and we have some popular Chinese games, Inuyasha, and we also recently added Dragon Ball Z.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right. So if I'm a listener at the moment and I'm a huge gamer and I'm listening to Off Gamers and I'm wondering, so, oh, this is pretty cool. It's an e-commerce site for gamers. How do I go about in terms of, you know, being a user of Off Gamers? Is this an app or is this a website? Do I log in and what do I get? Or is this within games itself that you have your presence and the back end? What's the presence here?
Both ways. If you play a game that has Off Gamers as a payment option, you can top up and pay for it within the game itself. If not, you can always come to Off Gamers, register yourself as a user, pick a product and just pay for it.
All right. It's as simple as that.
Yes, yeah. It's as simple as that. And we have retention programs and we have campaigns, giveaways, and every now and then. They're quite nice. Mm.
Now, you've also have this multi-game card. What's this and what's the reason in having this to exist alongside with your existing platform already?
Well, as an off-gamers, as an e-commerce site, we cater mainly to online customers with credit cards. So multi-game card is actually created and developed to address the needs of our customers who does not have the access to credit cards. They are cash payers. And in Southeast Asia, we have like maybe 40,000 channels and terminals that sells multi-game card. It's basically a cash-based alternative payment platform to power microtransactions in the gaming industry.
Mm. Yeah. And Christmas is around the corner. Any sort of exciting deals or you know, promotions, or are you working on anything to sort of, you know, attract more users to get onto the platform and to do things? I'm sure there will be a lot.
Plenty
of
promotions lined up. We have promotions lined up from Christmas all the way to Chinese New Year.
Mm. What's your aspiration for Off Gamers? Where are you looking to take Off Gamers to? Like, what's your vision of Off Gamers, say, you know, in a year's time or 2 years' time or 3 years' time down the road?
We are actually, my brothers, like I told you, we were part of the original crew. Ken, who actually founded the company, he's running a marketplace now, spin-off from Off Gamers. It's called Gamer to Gamer, G2G.com. It's for gamers to buy and sell their items, you know, anything related.
So it's a commerce, e-commerce store for gamers by gamers in that sense. It's a marketplace for gamers by gamers in that sense.
Yes.
Right. Wow, that's very cool. Is that something that Off Gamers tries to be, to cater to the gaming community? Because it's a growing scene here in Malaysia.
Yes, it actually completes our ecosystem.
Now, there's a giveaway thanks to Off Gamers, and you can win yourself a 50 ringgit Off Gamers gift card by just tweeting in to us, what is Off Gamers tagline? The answer is very simple. What is Off Gamers tagline? You could just Google it I think it's very easy. Send me your answer at BFM Radio. There will be two winners. We'll be back with the review of the PlayStation VR next. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Game Time and we're back. My name is Jeff Sandhu together with Richard Bradbury. And it's time that we've been waiting for, at least the start of the year itself. You know, when Project Morpheus was sort of announced. And then we were all wondering, ooh, that's a cool name. But when it was launched, it didn't quite have a cool name. It's just called the PlayStation VR.
Right. Maybe they should have stuck with Morpheus.
Morpheus. You know? Yeah, Morpheus was
way
a cooler name.
Way cooler.
But the device itself, Rich. So let's talk about the design now.
Okay.
I fell in love with the way it looked in images, even before seeing it in real life. I remember all the press release images that was sent around. And it looked futuristic. It looked, this is something from, like from Minority Report, from Tron.
A Daft Punk album, or, Tron,
the lost,
for sure.
The
yeah.
lost member of Daft Punk.
Right.
Whenever you do put it on, you feel like you're a lost member of Daft Punk. So the one thing that really caught my attention was just the way that it looked. And it, for me, this wood looked a bit heavy, looked a bit uncomfortable. But it wasn't.
Not at all.
Not at all. It was really comfortable, really light on the head as well, even though apparently it weighs heavier than the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, but it feels a lot comfortable. And I think kudos to Sony for doing that. And also, speaking of Sony, I have to thank them because they were the ones who lent us a copy, a review unit of the PlayStation VR for a good week and a half.
They did. It was so nice.
It was very nice.
Yes.
So my first experience of it was that, it looked great. And I had to wait for, about 4 or 5 days before I got my hands on it because you, Richard.
I had it first.
You had it first.
I did, yes. To go back to what you were saying, when you... It is a beautiful looking thing, I have to say. It is light enough that you can wear it for a considerable amount of time without it getting uncomfortable. It's got this nice balance of kind of pushing against your forehead and kind of pulling against the back of your head.
Yeah.
And it never feels heavy, not in that way that you'd expect it to from what it looks like. I mean, it's plastic, obviously, lots of nice little rubber hinges and one thing or another. It's well built.
The weight balance as well is perfect.
Right. But it is one of those things that you would not want to drop. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
You want to take care of the thing. It gets a little bit warm sometimes inside. You can get a little bit steamed up. But the way around that is to, before you start playing, switch on your device for a while, let it warm up, and then start using it. And the steaming up problem seems to go away.
So let's talk about the what's in the box. Lots of wires.
Oh, my word, wires. Oh, my word. Yes. There are two separate, from what I understand, there are two separate kits. There's the VR basic kit, or whatever they call it, which comes with the base unit and a set of headphones. Then there's the day launch kit, which has the headphones, the camera, and the Move
controllers.
Devices.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. So we had the whole package itself because we don't have the PlayStation 3 Move controllers or the PS camera itself. So Sony Malaysia were kind enough to send us the whole complete unit because that's what you need anyways.
Right.
You can buy the PSVR with the camera just by itself, but trust me, in order to fully experience the VR, you need to get the PS Move controllers as well.
Yeah, you do.
And for me, that has pros and cons. The pro is that it's giving you a different feel of playing a game in VR mode instead of just using a controller. The con is that I feel there is a disparaging, there's just a disparaging differences in terms of how the devices were made. You knew, when you look at the PSVR headset, this is futuristic. This was made in 2016. This was crazy. The PS Move controllers and the PS camera just didn't feel like it was that high-tech compared to the VR set itself.
Correct. And the camera, actually, that you get with the new VR kit is the new version of Sony's camera. Whereas before, the cable was on the side of the camera. Now it's at the back. And one of the problems that you had previously was that the camera, because of where the cable was situated, would often tilt up. The design of the new camera isn't that much better, to be honest.
It just started to fall behind my TV all the time.
Correct. And the Move controllers, I completely agree. They look as though they're something definitely last gen. But if you are a Sony exec and you're listening to this, kudos on the fact that you're taking a product and you're managing to shift it when it's been sat in warehouses for years.
Yeah.
Because nobody wanted those Move controllers. And now you almost have to have them.
Yeah.
So, those that are sat stacked gathering dust a few years ago, and now going to be sold.
And I think those people who were, you know, users of the PS Move controllers would be really happy to know that they could actually now just use it again for VR because you save a lot of money on this, right?
You do, yeah.
But then it begs the different questions, like what's going to happen next time round? Are they going to still stick with the PS Move controllers for the next version of the of the PlayStation VR? Because if I'm going to buy the PlayStation VR now, I'm going to have to get with the PS Move controllers. Mm-hmm. And if the next version of the PS VR comes out, what happens to my Move controllers?
Right.
Because I feel that, you know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, this is the first step, is stage one of the VR world. And let's go back to the wires itself. Like, we understand that, you know, in order to get the full experience, it needs to be wired at the moment. The wireless technology has not caught up yet.
Right.
There's too much of power. Hence, there's actually a processing unit on the side that you need to attach it to your PS4 and to your TV and to your headset itself.
Right.
So bear in mind, you need an extra plug point for the unit itself, for the processing unit.
Yeah.
And you need one more extra HDMI cable.
Yeah. You need to use a USB port on your PlayStation,
which is lacking on the PS4.
Yeah.
Because you only have two.
Correct.
And one is being used to the processing unit. And then you only have left with one.
Right.
But you have two PS Move controllers.
Right.
And you can't charge them both at the same time.
Right. Correct. Also, if you wanted to use the Bluetooth dongle for your PlayStation Gold headsets, PS4 Gold headsets, you would need the Bluetooth dongle. But on top of that, you can't actually use the Bluetooth headset.
I've tried it as well, Rich.
Right.
Like, initially, I thought, like, no way.
Right.
There is no way that, you know, Sony...
That's why I messaged you, because I'm like, dude, this can't be right. I can't use the Bluetooth headset wirelessly.
So anyways, setting up of it, even though there's tons of wires, the setup of it is actually fairly easy.
It's fairly
dummy-proof.
Well, I wouldn't say it's dummy-proof. If, let's say, for example, you have a home entertainment system, right? And you've spent time wiring it correctly and getting it looking nice and so beautiful and whatever. And the minute you start setting up the VR headset, you're unplugging wires here, you're unplugging wires there, and keeping track of where your stuff is sometimes can be confusing.
Mm.
And for me, the first time I set it up, I'm like, wait, is that my cable or is that Sony's cable? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
It's not that it's a difficult process. It's just a bit laborious.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to, there shouldn't be so many cables. And my word, there are so many cables.
Yeah. But the good thing about the VR and the one thing that I really like about the headset is that they've put in not just the volume button on the wire that comes out from your headset to the processing unit, not just the volume like you would normally have, but also the power button.
Right.
I think you know, clever things like that, and also having the headphone jack in that instead of, you know, on the processing unit itself. Having the power button at the headset itself made a lot of sense because, you know, you would want to stay away from your TV.
Yeah.
But that leads me to the other problem. I think the wires is not long enough.
Right.
Because the processing unit, you know, my PS4 is kept far away from my TV and from myself. Like, it's a good distance. It's at least about 10 feet away. The PSVR headset requires me to be a bit more closer, and I don't have that much space.
Mm.
And I feel like, you know, if only it was slightly longer, because it just felt I was dragging the controller itself, the unit itself, moving it around.
Yeah.
Did you have that same problem? Because your house is, you know, you did it in your living room, which is has a slightly narrower field, and you know, you basically play quite close to the TV.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I do play relatively close. Yeah, and I didn't really have much of a problem with. You know, not enough space.
Yeah.
The problem I'd got is because my space is so compact, the cable tended to kind of coil up a little bit and got in the way a little bit. So when you're trying to move around, there's that great big whack of cable that I could be using as a jump rope for exercising if I needed to, because it just felt like I'd got too much slack.
Mm.
But, I see both sides of the equation of that. You know, for some people it's going to be too long, for some people it's too short. It's an okay length, you know.
What about the setup after you've plugged it, everything, and then you turn on the VR? And we've tried on the PlayStation demo VR disc, which was, you know, given again by Sony Malaysia. And the first step I realized was like, okay, I got the camera fixed wrongly because it was the upside down.
Right.
There was no indication of which way it's up on the camera. I kept going back to flip it around.
Right.
And then the hook for the camera just kept falling off my TV.
Right, right. And another thing is the kind of bracket that comes with the camera. Looks like one of those brackets that you would put on top of the TV to attach a camera to. But no, it's not. It's an entirely separate thing that kind of sits in front of your TV, which for me makes no sense because that camera is then lower than your TV and your eyes want to be higher, right?
And I'm normally standing in VR mode.
Correct. Yeah. And so that was another issue for me. I mean, with TVs being as thin as they are nowadays, you can't balance that camera up on the top without a bracket. But like you say, with the setup, the initial setup, once you've plugged it in and you've powered it on, it's pretty much good to go out of the box. Yeah. There's a few things that you can tweak to make it a better experience. But there's no real software to download.
Nothing.
There's no updates to download.
Fairly easy. So good job in terms of doing it. And
and
then it comes on to the experience itself.
Right.
What was your first impression of when you entered, you know, the whole Sony screen started to load up and it's like, you know, PlayStation VR. And you're in this white world with, you know, mountains that are, looks like, you know, clouds that are designed by a designer or something like
They're very fancy.
Like a very fancy kind of world in this PS world, PlayStation VR world.
Well, I mean, I wear glasses when I game. So, so that's an issue as well. Because I couldn't quite get the exact length right to make it perfectly in focus at first. With a bit of fiddling, I managed to get it. Mm. So my first impression was, oh, it's a bit blurry. But but that's mainly down to my problem. But genuinely, when it first opened up, I had that moment of, oh my word, things are going to change drastically. Because it did feel immersive. It did. I'm looking up at a giant screen in front of me that's offering me the games that I can play. You know, and I look around to my right and to my left and there's this, you know, there's space. And it feels like there's space. It's not just some kind of randomly generated rubbish, you know.
Have you tried any other VR besides the PlayStation VR before this?
I tried the Oculus Rift briefly. But many, 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 many years ago, when VR was first kind of introduced, if we're talking about Lawnmower Man kind of, pre-1997, 98, it was these humongous kind of things that sat on your head. And, you know, those, you just kind of, this is going nowhere.
So I've tried the Oculus Rift just recently, I think about earlier this year.
Right.
And it was just a demo of a data center and so forth.
Right.
So it was not an immersive experience, just like a video tour. And I have the Gear VR from Samsung, which is powered by Oculus as well.
Yeah.
And that, for me, sort of gave me an understanding of what to expect in the VR world, which is expect pixelated quality and expect it not to be as immersive as I thought it would be.
Right.
The first thing that the PSVR did to me that blew my mind over was, and this is where the PS camera comes into play, is the ability that you can move around your head.
Yes.
And you can actually Drive Club, Drive Club VR game.
Yeah.
When my feel is when I get into a VR game, it's like, you know, I'm just going to sit here and not do anything. Until to a point when I realized, like, I can actually move closer to the steering wheel and actually see it.
Right.
And actually feel like, oh, I want to touch that steering wheel.
Right. The first time that happened to me, I downloaded the Playroom, the VR Playroom, because, you know, I thought we'd look at some other stuff that was kind of kid-based. And there's a game on there, or part of a game, where you play a cat. Right. And there's like a screen in front of you and behind that screen is a bunch of mice. Right. And I was trying to figure out how the heck do I see these mice? And all you do is you move closer to the screen. And you put your head through the screen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's quite genius.
Yeah.
You know, very smart.
And I think that's where the VR element really comes into play. And it really pushes what my usual VR understanding was. Like, you know, the Gear VR didn't have a, you know, camera to track on it. It's just using my phone. And, you know, that kind of loses the element of being able to move around in a free world.
Right.
The PSVR does one step more. But it's still not as, I don't know, is it for the hardcore gamers here?
I don't think so. No.
Or is it just because the games are not good enough? The VR set is good enough?
Because we're in an early stage, right?
We're in an early stage. So the games that we've tried on is all demo games.
Yeah.
I've tried on Drive Club VR.
Yeah.
And I've tried on something else, which is called the Call of Duty Infinite Warfare VR, which is basically like just a VR version of Space Atari. And, you know, you're in this spaceship. It just looks cool that, you're in a spaceship, but it's a very linear kind of gameplay.
Right.
And it's within 5 minutes. It's just try to get your high score of how many planes you can shoot down
right.
within a few minutes or within 5 minutes.
I tried Battlezone, which is the, tank-based game where you can move around in free space. I also tried a game called Riggs, which is you get inside a mech, and it's kind of like American football slash basketball or something, both of which really fully immerse me in a world. There's a moment in Riggs where another character who is, you know, he kind of approaches you to shake your hand and claps his hands. And that moment for me was like, that looked real. Mm. You know, he was the right height, and the draw distance was great. But two things. One thing that really affected me was that I got motion sick from both those two games.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Wow.
And I wasn't sure whether it was because of the draw distance or one thing or another. But I had to like look up online to see if this was an issue. And it is for many people. You know, motion sickness at first is something that becomes an issue. Over time, you kind of get used to it. But you have to take very regular breaks, otherwise you can vomit and one thing or another.
I've never had a motion sickness problem with the VR.
This was the first time that I've ever played any kind of video game and thought, I have to stop right now because it's making me feel physically sick. That being said, that's a good indicator that it is truly immersive. If your body is reacting to it like that, there's something happening. Right?
Now, we're going to take a short break because I think Richard is still having a motion sickness problem. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back and we're reviewing the PlayStation VR. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Richard Bradbury. And early on, Richard, you were talking about, you know, the motion sickness issue with the VR. But I think it's really just, you know, comes down to the individual.
Correct.
And there is actually warning when you do turn on the VR off, you know, the kind of things that you need to do. Take breaks and, you know, just
drink,
turn it off,
water,
drink water, do all this kind of stuff. So the good thing about this is that for me especially, I could play VR for like a good full hour or two without ever feeling like, you know, oh, I need to take this off.
Yep.
The comfort level of this was amazing. I didn't get any motion sickness into it. The only thing that I felt the reason why I couldn't go on longer is the lack of content for VR.
Agreed.
Even though, you know, Sony has announced, you know, number of titles that are VR enabled now, a lot of these titles just feel like it's a 5 or 20 minutes or 30 minutes experience. It's like a teaser of what would happen.
Agreed.
But these teasers though, for one, Batman Arkham VR, ringgit on the PlayStation Store. And I was contemplating very much so on whether do I buy this or not, or do I just let it go, right?
Or do I buy a BF season pass?
Which I have not bought yet. So I decided to, like, you know what? For the sake of the review, I will buy the Batman Arkham VR because everyone has said that that is the best experience the VR can give you right now. And I have to say, they were right. It really made you feel like you're Batman, you're Bruce Wayne. And even when you're playing as, you know, Bruce Wayne as a kid, no spoilers here because everyone knows what happens when Bruce Wayne was a kid and they went into the alley and, you know,
bang bang, you're dead.
Right? Yeah. There was a cutscene that happened, and the Batman VR game is more like an storytelling experience in a VR world. You don't really do much action. You don't really battle much. You just have the ability to, you know, throw your batarang. You can use your grappling hook, or you could use like a body scanner, kind of like an FBI, CSI kind of scanner thing. So the real immersive thing happened for me was when in the initial stage of the experience, you were playing as, you know, Bruce Wayne as a kid, and, you know, you were walking down the alley. You just have to stand there. You don't do anything. It's just then the mom comes and talks to you, and then the dad turns around, and there was, you know, the criminal who comes in and tries to rob your parents. At that point of time, I really felt like I was a kid, even though I was standing and I'm 6'1" here. And I felt I was a kid because the way the mom was looking at me, I was looking up. And I felt like, wow.
Smart.
This really makes me feel like a kid all over again.
Yeah.
And the beauty of having the camera in there and having that sensors and trackers around, I could actually like hide behind my mom because I was just so afraid of the gun. The gunner was just going to shoot me.
Very clever.
So I could move around and just hide behind my mom, or I could just take a peek in between my mom and my dad and see what's going on. And then they get shot, and then you fast forward to Bruce Wayne in the new world, and then you get transported down into, you know, Batman's cave. And from there, you basically just get to see cool things that Batman has in his cave. You don't really get to do much of action. The whole gameplay lasts for about 30 minutes. And the end of it, you get to meet the Joker. And this is the Joker after Arkham Asylum, so he's the mental Joker, the crazy one. I have to say, I was scared. Because the Joker in that, towards the end, really, really psychotic Joker. And because I had a Razer headphones on with the 7.1 surround, it really utilizes the fact that when Joker laughs on the right side of my ear, you could hear his laugh.
Right.
And everything changes around you when Joker is coming. It was such a good experience, but it was only 30 minutes long, and I didn't really do anything. Mm. Like, I could just sit down and just be, it was cool, it was impressive, but that's it. I'm going to do once, and I'm not going to be doing it again, because...
Right.
That's it. So if games are going to be in that direction, though, I don't know if VR is the right thing here. Unless you have games like, you know, Battlefield or Battlefront, for example, which, you know, we have the X-Wing demo, which we never get to try because it's, you know, we return
right.
it back. And,
right.
But like, if games are just, you know, a 30-minute experience for, you know, 110 or 150 ringgit, I don't see, though, how VR is going to attract me as a hardcore gamer to buy the VR set.
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute, right? That's all well and good, but assume you use the VR for an educational tool, for example, and you have an experience like that for the same price, which takes you on a tour of the human body or something along those lines. You use that in schools or even universities.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a great way of visualizing things that you're trying to learn. For example, on the Sony demo disc, and I know you didn't get to try it, was the one where you go underneath the sea. And it's incredible. It really, really is. And it really uses the power of the VR, you know, device and the rendering distance and one thing or another to look around underneath the ocean and see things that if you've never dived before, you get to see and you kind of almost get to experience it. So for me, I understand your frustration as a hardcore gamer that you wanted more out of it.
Yes. It then begs the question, did Sony make the PlayStation VR for the masses or was it for the PS4 gamers?
I think it's for the masses.
Which I really think it is. And if it's for the masses, then they've hit the nail on the head here.
For sure.
Because it is easy to set up.
Yep.
Granted, there's a lot of wires and it looks absolutely messy. The neat freak in me just hated it.
Same.
Because there's so many wires going on and I don't know where to put them.
Right.
But as a mass audience, if this was something, like you mentioned, in education or even games for my nephew or for my nieces who could, you know,
who wouldn't care?
Who wouldn't care if they were playing the same game over and over and over and over again because it's only a 30-minute game. But for them, they would do it. This is an amazing thing here.
One of the games on the playroom, the VR playroom, where it is this idea of you play a sheriff and you walk into, like, you know, the little minion things in the VR playroom, right? And you walk into a town or a bar or whatever it is where they're serving milkshakes and you have to shoot the villain in the room, but you don't know who the villain is. The person who's watching the TV tells you and describes what they look like.
Ah.
And you have to make sure you shoot with a sticky dart the right one. So there's that level of interactivity, but it's so child and kid oriented. But it's so much fun. But it doesn't matter that, you know, as a gamer and somebody who plays in HDR and whatever is seeing like these jagged edges. It wouldn't matter because it's just instant fun.
So it's simple. Like the PSVR puts a smile on anyone's faces. Whether you're a hardcore gamer or you're not a hardcore gamer or you're a kid, it will put a smile on your face.
Yeah.
But is it worth spending 2,029 ringgit for the bundle with the camera? Because you need the camera anyways.
Yeah, you do.
Or, to be honest with you, you need the whole set, right? Which
right.
is going to be a bit more expensive with the PS Move controllers as well.
Yeah. Not only that, but, you know, we have to kind of emphasize that we reviewed this on the base PS4 unit.
Yes.
We didn't use the new PS4 Pro, which we know generates a higher definition image. So all of this review that you're listening to is from the original PS4. Mm. Now, the difference, from what I understand, is quite negligible, but enough that it makes the frame rates a little bit smoother, so maybe the kind of motion sickness might go away. So if you're looking at getting the whole package as a new entrance into using a PS4 and a VR, you're talking 2,000 ringgit for a PlayStation Pro, and another 2,000 ringgit for the VR set.
4,000 ringgit.
Around about 4,000 ringgit.
Is this something long-term, though? Because we know the PS5 will come out with, what, 2 years' time, 3 years' time, wherever, right? And when that comes out, I have a feeling that the processing unit of the VR will be built
inside,
in
of course,
the PS itself.
It has to be.
It has to be, because just too many things, Lonnie. Like, you can't have too many things in the house like that. It's not look cool at all, especially with all the wires and all.
Right.
So if they were going to build the processing unit within the PS, the next generation of the PS, though, me as the hardcore gamer might wait.
Of course. That's pretty much the same boat that I'm in. As much as I love the idea of VR, there is nothing out there released right now that encourages me to go out and buy it.
Yeah.
There just isn't, for me.
Yeah. But having said that, if I were to look for a Christmas gift, a very expensive Christmas gift,
right,
for someone that I love, for my kid, for example,
right?
And it's something that it's not just about playing games, it's about an experience.
Right.
Because, you know, parents always talk about, oh, you know, you should stop playing your games and, you know, it's not good for, you know, so all that. But the VR has that ability to give you more than just playing games. It allows you to learn certain things as well.
It can take you anywhere.
It can take you anywhere. And it all comes down to the developers and what are they planning to do with this.
Yeah.
At the moment, there's very little of, you know, kid learning elements that or games that kids could learn stuff. But I'm very sure, you know, they are already in development. If you're looking for something that will really, you know, benefit your kid, the PSVR is really a masterpiece in that sense.
Yeah, agreed.
Super simple to set up. You would have a good time as well for, you know, the half an hour playing Batman Arkham. After that, you'll probably be done and you're not going to play it. But your kid would love this.
For sure.
Out of 10, Rich.
Ooh, that's a tough one. As a gaming device, I would say 6... as an educational device, maybe 8.
Yeah, I'm probably going to give it like a 6 out of 10 as well as a PS user in that sense. And would I buy a PSVR for my PS4 standard edition? I don't even have the PS4 Pro. I would give it a 6 out of 10. But in terms of education and not, I would actually give this like a 10 out of 10, because I think this is an amazing product, super affordable, because it's still way cheaper than the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift as well, right? So it's much cheaper, although you're not including the console itself. But then same with the HTC Vive and the PS, with the Oculus Rift.
You need a PC.
You need a PC, which is going to cost you the same as well. With that, though, we're going to leave you with a hint of what's going to happen on the next episode, because we've just watched the release of the Last of Us 2 trailer.
Have we? Yes.
And I
was kind of lost for words for a little while.
I can't stop watching it. I will be in tears the next episode.
Oh, dear. Folks, hold onto your pants.
And with that, though, this has been Game Time. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Richard Bradbury. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcast at bfm.my, or if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, you can download the BFM app and get it from there. This has been Game Time, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.